Good morning. Today's daf from Pesachim is Vav. We are in Hey Amud Beis. We are at the two dots, about two-thirds of the way down the Gemara. We're starting with the word Zamar Mar. We're going to be dissecting a Braisa. Yesterday on Hey Amud Beis, we introduced ourselves to a Braisa that dealt with the issues of Bal Yerah Bal Yematzeh. Isurim on Pesach as relates to Chametz is that one's not allowed to eat Chametz. There's an Isur Achila. One's not allowed to benefit from Chametz. There is an Isur of Hana'a, and one is not allowed to own Chametz. Ownership of chametz is based on two psukim. It's actually more than two psukim, but we really, the Braisa yesterday platformed itself on two psukim. One pasuk the Gemara quoted, both of them in Parshas Bo. One of them is Shivas Yamim Sor Lo Yimatzeh Bevateichem. So you're not allowed to find chametz in your house. That's Bal Yimatzeh. And then we have another pasuk, Lo Yirelecha Seor. Now again, exactly which pasuk it is and how the Gemara is quoting it, but the Gemara is misquoting the pasuk just a little bit, but regardless, lo yirelecha seor v'lo yirelecha chametz b'chol gvulecha. You're not allowed to see your chametz in any of your gvulim. So we really came down to two psukim and two points that really interplayed with one another. One is bal yematzeh. Bal yematzeh is the idea that you can't find the chametz in your property. Meaning to say that even if I don't physically see it, but it's anywhere within my property, but it's not allowed to be there. Now, admittedly, the pasuk of lo yematzeh is bivateichem, it's in your house. But as we pointed out yesterday, it's also true gvulin as well. The word gvulin in this context simply means not your house, but any part of your property, right? Generally speaking, when we talk about gvulin, we're talking about outside of Yerushalayim. But in this context, we mean simply your property, your home versus the rest of your property. So when it comes to your home, so that's bateichem, lo yematzeh bivateichem. When it comes to the rest of your property, that's called gvulin. But the idea is, as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, is that we have a Gzeira Shava, linking the two. Whatever's true in your bias is true in the Gvulin. And whatever's true in the Gvulin is true in the bias. So what's true in the bias? Lo Yematzeh. You're not allowed to have Chametz, you're not allowed to find Chametz, meaning there can be no Chametz of yours, period, in your house. And that's not just true in your house, it's true in any of your properties as well. That's Lo Yematzeh. What about Lo Yireh? So for that, the Pasuk says, Lo Yireh Lecha Seor. The Gemara picked up yesterday, the Braisa picked up yesterday on the word Lecha. The word Lecha tells you that you can't have your chametz in your property, but other people's chametz. Notably, that of a non-Jew, that of Hekdesh. If their chametz is on your property, that's fine, because the Isser is ownership and your chametz being on your property, but you're allowed to have others' chametz on your property. Good, this is the Braisa that we saw yesterday. The Braisa made a number of points, and what the Gemara is going to be doing now for the first part of today's daf is that it's just simply going to go over some of the points that were made in the Braisa, and we're going to be starting now, picking it up where we left off yesterday with the words Amar Mar. Amar Mar, there are a couple of them on the daf, so you want to go to the first Amar Mar. It's about two-thirds of the way down, first words in the line, Atar Re'eh Shalachem V'Shal Gavo, and then there are two dots, and that's where we are starting this morning. Amar Mar Ata Ein Li'ala B'Nachri Shalo Kivashto Ve'in Shari Yimach B'Chatzer. So the Gemara, the Braisa yesterday brought in the following point, and that is there are two types of non-Jews, or we're going to categorize them and put them into two different categories. One is a Nachri Shekivashto. Now he's subjugated, meaning that the Jew subjugated the non-Jew. Now the Braisa itself is not perfectly clear what we mean. It doesn't seem that we're talking about Nevekanani. That is subjugation, obviously, but that's also ownership. So over here, when we're talking about subjugation, probably we mean that the Jews are right now currently living in Israel, autonomous, and the Nachri in question over here, something like a resident alien, right? A Ger Toshav. Okay, could be that that's what the Braisa is making reference to. It's not particularly clear. To be honest with you, Rashi does not shed light on it. Anyway, but the point is as follows, is that the Braisa was making a distinction between a Nachri Shelo Kivashto, where he is not at all subjugated by the Jews that he lives within, and then there's a Nachri Shekivashto. And the Braisa made the argument that I might have thought that Lo Yematzeh applies to a Nachri Shelo Kivashto, meaning that he's independent, but a Nachri Shekivashto, where he's subject to you, so I wouldn't have thought that, and the Gemara says, therefore Lo Yematzeh. Now, the Gemara says, now, if you think about it for just a moment, right, regardless of what kind of kvisha we're talking about, the logic is exactly in the reverse. Meaning that if I have a Nachri who's subject to the Jew, so under those circumstances, you can make the argument that his money is much more connected to you So if anything, which one would seem to be more obvious to be a violation of lo yimatzei? That would be the nachri shekivashto. So if anything, the argument now would go in the exact reverse, and that's exactly the Gemara's question. So Amar Abai, so the Gemara's going to give two answers. So Abai's answer is very simple, epoch. So Abai's response is, yeah, you know what, you're absolutely right. Take the Braisa and just simply invert the Braisa, so that the Braisa first is going to be talking about the Nachri Shekivashto, where his money is much more shayach to you, and therefore that's a violation of Lo Yimatzei, but even the Nachri Shelo Kivashto also is going to be subject to Lo Yimatzei. Okay, that's one way to respond to the Braisa, but that of course is dramatic, because it's going to require us to flip around the Braisa. Rav Amar Lo Olam Lo Tepach, Rav says no need to flip it around. Ve'aresha Kai. And really what it's going back on is going back on the first part of the Braisa. What the Braisa is making reference to over here is the heter. The heter that as long as the chametz is not yours, it can be on your property. So and now the argument over here is going to sound right. It's going to be correct logically. And that is, you can have non-Jews chametz on your property. I can certainly hear that under the circumstance where the Nachri is not subject to you. So he's totally independent of you. And therefore, you're going to have his chametz on your property that I totally hear. But Nachri Shekivashto V'shari Yamach B'chatzim Inayin. But if I have a Nachri Shekivashto, where he is subject to you, and he's living in your chatzir, so how do I know that you are allowed to have his chametz on your property? Tamalomer Lo Yimatzei. So therefore, the Torah says Lo Yimatzei. Now, good. So from a logic standpoint, now it makes a lot more sense. We're not talking about the Isser, we're now talking about the Heter. That as long as it's not your chametz, it can be on your property. And even if we're talking about a non-Jew who is subject to you, nevertheless, it's still ultimately his chametz, and therefore it's not a violation of Lo Yimatzei. So the Gemara says, it's logically great. It's just a technical issue, which is that the Braisa, what pasuk is the Braisa according to make this point? Lo Yimatzei, v'haytan mahadar ha'ater v'nasiv leikra li'isura. And that's the Gemara's question. Why are you punctuating the point by quoting Lo Yimatzei, which is the Isser? In other words, really what we're looking at is the Heter over here. Mishum shenema lecha lecha trei zimne. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's true, but it's more a function of the word lecha. It actually says lecha a couple of times. The Gemara does not highlight where exactly it says it twice. Rashi does spend a little bit of time over here on the bottom of the Amud, going over the two locations in the Torah where the Torah says the word lecha, but the heter is generated from the word lecha, meaning that the iser to own chametz is only your chametz, and since we have it, the word lecha written multiple times, so therefore it comes to introduce a chiddush. What's the chiddush? Not only a non-Jew who is not subject to you, but even a Jew who is subject to you. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of that section. We continue in the Gemara. Hamid Bey's first wide line, Amar. Yachol Yatmin v'kabel pikdonos min anachriim. I might think that what I could do is just simply bury the chametz, right? I don't see it, it's fine. This is the havamin of the Braisa that we saw yesterday. V'kabel pikdonos min anachriim, or simply take it from the non-Jew, take the chametz from the non-Jew, and just simply serve to be a guardian over the chametz. Tamalomar lo yimatzei. You can't do either of those because the pasuk says lo yimatzei. Now, Hamad Resha Shachaya Taro Val Taro Shachem Vishal Gavo. Now, probably and hopefully this bothered you yesterday, and that is that the Braisa is certainly giving us very mixed messages about holding on to a non-Jew's chametz over Pesach. The Braisa we saw yesterday said, on one hand, Lecha She'i Ataro Val Taro Shachem. Acherim is a reference to a non-Jew. So the Braisa says that you are allowed to hold on to the chametz of a non-Jew, and that can be on your property, and there's no problem whatsoever with a violation of Bal Yimatzei. On the other hand, then the Braisa says that you cannot bury chametz in the ground, and you cannot be holding on to the chametz of a non-Jew when you are a shomer. And so that means to say that you can't have the chametz of a non-Jew on your property. So the Braisa is confusing us because it really gives us mixed messages about a non-Jew's chametz on your property. So the Gemara says that it's a problem, but the Gemara says lo kasha, but it's not a problem. Hadakaba alay achrayus, hadalokaba alay achrayus. So probably you forecasted the answer, and that is, it depends on what your level of responsibility is towards that chametz, that of the non-Jew on your property. If you have no responsibility whatsoever, So then it's perfectly fine. That's the drasha of lecha atarua val lecha I atarua val atarua chamit shal acherem. Good. So if you have no responsibility whatsoever, that chamit says no shaychus to you, and that's perfectly fine. The braisa that says that you cannot accept the chametz of a non-Jew and hold on to it over Pesach, that's talking about when you have liability, responsibility. Under those circumstances, you are not allowed to hold on the chametz of a non-Jew. Now, when we talk about liability, we're talking about being a shomer. Now, as we know, we've gone over this a number of times in the Bavas, specifically Bav Metzia, we're going to be spending a lot of time with this. So how many levels of shmira are there? So there are many levels of being a shomer. So there's a shomer chinam where you're not getting paid. There's a shomer sacher where you are getting paid. There is a socher. There's a shoel. So over here, what the Gemara is saying very clearly is that if you take on a level of shmira, so at that point in time, it's going to be usher for you to hold on to the chametz of a non-Jew. What the Gemara does not mention is what level of shmira are we talking about? So to that, it sounds like what we're going to be talking about is a Shomer Sachar. Now, this is debated amongst the Rishonim, and I am not going to take a deep dive in which on the opinions of the Rishonim. I think for our purposes right now for the Daf, I'm just simply going to say that we're talking about a Shomer Sachar in terms of level liability. Why do I say that? Because you'll see the upcoming Gemara. The upcoming Gemara certainly makes it sound like we're talking about a Shomer Sachar. Which would mean then that if you're just a Shomer Chinam, that's not enough liability and not enough responsibility so that you'll be in any kind of violation. It's only when you hit the threshold of being a Shomer Sachar. A Shomer Sachar, as we know, is responsible for Gneva Vaveda. If the item is stolen, or if you lost the item, you have to reimburse, you have to make full restitution of the value of the item. So that is where you cannot hold on to the chametz of a non-Jew. So again, why do I say that comfortably? Well, again, I'm acknowledging it's the debate amongst the Rishonim, but based on the upcoming Gemara, in fact, the Gemara right here. Ki ha damalu Rav of Bnei Mechuza, Rav spoke to the people in his town. Bi'ura chamir de Bnei Chela. You must get rid of the chametz of the Bnei Chela. Bnei Chela were the non-Jewish soldiers who were living in Mechuza, right? They were given quarters in the people's houses of Mechuza, and their chametz was there in the house. So Biir Chamer de Menechala me Ba'atechus, the Rav's instructions were, you got to get rid of the chametz. Okay, now I know it does bring about a bit of an issue in that it's not your chametz. You're serving as a shomer of the chametz, shomer sachar, as will become evident in just a moment. And what are you going to do now? You're just simply going to destroy it. And when the soldier comes back, I mean, first of all, he's a soldier. He's going to be a little bit intimidating. But when the soldier comes back, he's going to ask you the question, did I ask you to destroy it? Right? Are you going to have to reimburse for that which you destroyed? Okay, so I understand there are a lot of follow-up questions over here. Right now, I'm just dealing with the starting point of Rav is telling the people in Mechuza, you can't hold on to that chametz over Pesach. You're going to be in violation of Bal Yim Matzei. You're going to be in violation of ownership. Why? Kevin de ilu migna ve ilu misbeid, birshu saichu kai, ubi isu lishlumei, kidil chon dami. Since if it were to be stolen or lost, and you are going to have to reimburse for that item, the item now becomes like yours, and therefore, usur, therefore it is going to be prohibited. Good. So this is Rava's argument. It becomes clear from Rava that once you have a certain level of responsibility for an item that you are watching, it's ki'ilu, it's yours, and therefore you're going to be in violation of Bayim Matze. And because he uses example specifically of if the item is lost or if the item is stolen, so it seems pretty clear that he's talking about a Shomer Sachar. That really is the simple pshat of the Gemara. Okay, and really what does this touch on over here? You don't own an item. You're responsible for the item. If the item were lost, you have to make good in terms of restitution and reimbursement of the item, and therefore it's tantamount to it being yours. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? It really brings us to the topic of davar hagarm lamamon. And so the Gemara says, okay, let's open up that topic. So if you subscribe to the idea that a davar hagarm lamamon, something that causes you financial loss, it's not yours, you don't own it, but you're responsible for it, and you have to make restitution if you lost it. That's a davar hagarm lamamon. So if we say halachically it's kamamon, it has the same status of actual money. So then I totally understand our discussion. But if I say a davar agarim lamamun is lavka mamon dami, and it's clear from the Gemara over here that this is subject to a machlokus, and if I take this position, so what am I going to say over here? How can I say that chametz, which is not mine, and I'm just simply holding on to, and have custodial responsibility for it, so how can we say that I'm in violation of ownership? So the Gemara says it's very simple. Shani hachadamar lo yimatzeg. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how you could say it. Because we have a drasha over here. And the drasha tells us that under normal circumstances it's not mamon, but the drasha of the Torah, lo yimatzeg, tells you that vis-a-vis Pesach, it is going to be considered mamon, and you will be in violation. Meaning the sensitivity level of ownership on Pesach is going to be a higher sensitivity. The requirements of ownership are, quote-unquote, even a little bit looser. Even though in general, Davar Gorm Lamamun is Lavka Mamun Dami, but when it comes to Pesach, so the terms and definition of ownership is a little bit more relaxed, so that you are going to be considered the owner, even though it's a Davar Gorm Lamamun. Now, Ikadamri, now here what we're going to do is we're going to have basically the same discussion. We're just going to invert the discussion. You'll see what I mean. Ikadamri, in another version, Hanich Laman Dami, Davar Gorm Lamamun, Lavka Mamun Dami. If I take the position of Devar Garam Mamon is Lavka Mamon Dami, so then I understand the drasha. Hainu de Itzrich Lo Yematzei. So then I understand Lo Yematzei. Lo Yematzei is coming to teach me that in general, a Devar Garam Mamon is Lavka Mamon, but regarding Chametz on Pesach, it's enough. Meaning your responsibility is going to be considered enough to qualify as ownership. Elaman Damar Kamamon Dami Lo Yematzei Lamali. But if I take the position of Devar Garam Lamamon is Kimamon, so then over here I don't need a drasha, meaning consider. If my position is a Devar Garam is considered like money actual, so that means to say that as long as I'm responsible, so that's viewed as if I am the owner. So then I don't need a special drasha. So then what's the need of Lo Yimatzei? It's a strong question. So it's the Rech, and the Gemara says no, but I'll tell you why it becomes necessary. Because let's say that the custodial relationship does not end in failure, but it ends in a perfect success. Meaning he asked me to watch the chametz, I watched it, and then I returned it to him. Now over there, obviously I don't have to reach into my pocket at all. And I don't have to make any kind of restitution. So what comes out over there is that in that circumstance, the item, the chametz here in question, never was mine. It's true that while I was holding on to it, so I was financially responsible, but ultimately, how did it conclude? I just simply handed back the chametz to the non-Jew. So under those circumstances, one can make a really strong argument that it's not considered yours, even if I generally hold davar agarim lamamun kamamun dami. That's what the drasha is coming to tell me, that no. That as long as you had responsibility during the custodial relationship while you were a shomer, that's enough to be a violation of Lo Yimatzei. Okay, so when all said and done, what comes out pretty clearly from the Gemara over here and understanding the Braisa is that the non-Jew's chametz on your property, if you have no liability to it whatsoever, if you have no responsibility to it whatsoever, so then it's no problem whatsoever. That's the drasha of lecha I ataroa ava ataroa shel acherim. If, on the other hand, you do have financial responsibility, if you're liable, if you're a shomer, and the simple reading of the Gemara is shomer sachar, so then you are going to be considered an owner vis-a-vis chametz on Pesach, and you will be in violation of lo yimatzei, of bal yimatzei. Okay. It kind of takes us to the end of that section. Barminei Merava. The Gemara is going to go off of here on a little bit of a tangent, although it is connected to the discussion we just had in terms of registering who the owner is. Barminei Merava. The Gemara asked the following question. I'm sorry. The Talmidim asked the following question from Rava. Now, just to appreciate this question, let me just go over a little bit of background. Firstborn animals are bechor, and therefore have to be given to the kohen, and the kohen is going to offer it as a karban. If, however, there is no Beis HaMikdash, which has been the case now for just under 2,000 years, so now what is the Kohen going to do with the Bechor? It's going to be a problem, because he can't offer it as a Karban. He's going to have to wait till it develops a blemish, and then you cannot actively put a blemish on the animal. Okay, you should be holding on to that animal for some time. Okay, so is there a way to circumvent the issue? And the answer is yes, because we know the halacha is, the Gemara in Bechoros tells us, that if I have a shareholder in this animal who is not Jewish, so then it's going to exempt from the Kedushas Bechor. Good, that's the halacha. Now the Gemara's question is as follows. So we say that if you have a shareholder who's not Jewish in this animal, and it doesn't have to be a majority shareholder, by the way, it could be a minority shareholder, but as long as you have a shareholder in this animal, so that actually will create an exemption of Kedushas Bechor. So now the Gemara's question goes as follows, Behemas Arnuna, Chayevas Bebechora, Oein Chayevas Bebechora. So let's say you have an animal that your animals are subject to a tax, where the king is going to come and take a portion of your animals as simply tax collection. Rashi over here writes, by the way, that they're taking 10%. Okay. Slightly higher tax brackets over here in this country, but that's from the animal, Rashi says, and also from your grain as well. So that means to say that you have a partner in your income. Okay, that's how it works, Baruch Hashem, in this country. We have a partner in our income, and that's going to be the government. So nothing has changed in the last 2,000 years. So, and now the question is as follows. So now that you have the king who is not Jewish, who does have now a holding in your holdings, in your assets, so is that enough to create a petorah? So the Gemara says, it goes like this. Here's how the halacha works. So the Gemara says, well, if let's say as follows. Let's say that the government is assessing the tax based on your animals, but you don't have to pay in animals. But what you could do just simply is assess the value of how much tax you owe and then pay out of pocket that tax and not have to actually provide any of your animals. So that's not considered, the government is not considered like a shareholder in your animals. And therefore, in this particular case, it's going to work against you because now your animals are actually going to be chayiv in the Kedusha of Bechor. But let's say the king does not accept any kind of cash payment of your taxes. They're going to collect from the animal itself. What would be the halacha over there? Is the king, the non-Jewish king, now considered a shareholder in your animals? And is that going to necessarily create an exemption from the Kedushas Bechor? Amalu Rava's answer is very simple. Petura. Rava says, yeah, they're going to be exempt. Okay, Va'atanya Chayev. So Gemara says, we have a braisa that says you're Chayev. So Hasan de Matzim Masalik Lei. So the Gemara says, yeah, that braisa is talking about where you don't have to pay in animal. You can simply pay out of pocket. You could pay the cash equivalency of what that animal would be. Okay, and under those circumstances, the king is no longer considered shareholders in the animal itself. Igadami, the Gemara, has a slightly different version of the discussion, and that is Amarava Behemas Arnuna Peturim and Abachora. If I have animals which are subject to tax, so they're going to be Patur from Bechora, from Kedushas Bechora, as we just got done explaining, the Alpha Gav Demasi Masalikle. But in this version considers the king to be a shareholder, even if I don't have to pay with the animal. Even if I can go ahead and pay out of pocket and pay the cash value of the animal, nevertheless, the king is still going to be considered a shareholder. So in this second version, we're going to be even more lenient in terms of what creates exemption. What creates exemption is that if one of your animals has to go, not just one, but if a percentage of your animals has to go towards the king's tax, and even if I could pay out of pocket, that still is going to be considered like the king is a shareholder in your animals, and therefore you're exempt from Kedushas Bechor. However, continuing in the second version, Isis Anuna Chayavas Bechalam, the Afagav Delo Matzi Masalik Lei. So, but what, let's say you have dough, and of that dough, the dough is also going to get taxed as well. So you are going to still have to be Mafrish Chala, despite the fact that you do have a non-Jewish shareholder in the dough. Now, what's the difference? My taima, behema isle kala, isa le isle kala. So the Gemara says, because when it comes to livestock, they're just people know your business when it comes to livestock, right? Remember livestock back in the day? There were like public auctions and, you know, it was basically on public record. And so therefore, with your livestock, so everybody knows that the king now has a holding in your animals. He's going to take a tax. So therefore, that's the kind of shareholder that everybody knows about. And as a result of that, so you're exempt from Kedushas Bechor. On the other hand, when it comes to your dough, right? So not everybody knows whether or not the king is a shareholder or not a shareholder. It's not subject to public record. So over there, people simply don't know. And there, people are going to see you now eating the dough, meaning obviously the dough is baked into bread. People are going to see you eating the bread, having noticed that you did not separate challah from that dough. And they're not going to understand why. They're not going to understand that it's because there is a non-Jewish shareholder in the dough. So it's going to confuse people. It's basically a function of marasayin. That's how the Gemara says it. Rashi spells it out even clearer. So that's why when it comes to the dough, even though the king has a shareholding in the dough, nevertheless, you're still going to have to be mafresh challah because of marasayin. Okay. A number of follow-up questions, which I won't answer, but at least I'll raise. And that is when I'm separating challah, when I'm making mafresh challah, not because there's an actual requirement to do so, but because of marasayin, like we just said over here. You have to make a bracha. If you're being mafresh challah for just marasayin, okay, it's a wonderful follow-up question. We continue in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. Nachri shenichnas lechatzer shei Yisrael b'tzeiko b'yad do. Ein zakuk labayr. So let's say it's Pesach, right, and you're being visited by your non-Jewish neighbor, and he happens to holding a sandwich in his hands, and let's embellish a little bit. He's enjoying the sandwich, and he's coming onto your property. So ein zakuk labayr. So there's no need for you now to rip the sandwich out of his hand and flush it down the toilet. Okay, in other words, it's not your chametz. Yes, it's your property, but it's not your chametz, and that's perfectly fine, and that's in perfect consistency with what we learned in yesterday's daf. Good. Now, if he gave it to you to watch and you now are serving, you have a custodial relationship with it, so now you have to get rid of it, as we just discussed in the beginning of today's daf. If, however, let's say you rent him space on your property, so now he's renting the space on your property and he's keeping that chametz in the rented space, so that's going to be fine, because the Torah says lo yimatzei. Now, my comment, the Gemara says, wait 1 second. That pasuk lo yimatzei, what was that modifying? Because lo yimatzei is coming to teach me a chumra, as we saw in yesterday's daf, as we reviewed in the beginning of today's daf. So what was a lo yimatzei coming and modifying within the braisa? The braisa made 3 points. Point number one, a non-Jew walks in with a sandwich. Point number two is that if he hands it to you to watch as a custodian. And point number three is if he rents out space in your property, and which would be okay. And then the Braisa punctuates with saying the words lo yimatzei. What was that going on? So Amra Papa Reshakai v'achi kam efkiru atzlo zakuk levar shenemar lo yimatzei. So Rav Papa says it's going on the Reisha. Now we say Reisha, we really mean the Mitzia. But the point is that once you have a custodial relationship, you have to get rid of it, as we already clarified earlier this morning. Good. That's Rav Papa's understanding, which is just a little bit awkward because now lo yimatzei, which comes at the end of the braisa, is modifying a point that was even a little bit earlier. Okay, but that is Rav Papa's approach. Rav Ashi amar lo lama seifa kai. Rav Ashi says, no, it's really going on the seifa, which is that if you rent him space in your property, so then he can leave whatever he wants over there because that rented space is considered his. And v'hachi kama yich lo bais in zakul glavar shenem lo yimatzei bevatechem v'halav didehu denachri ki kamayo lebeisa denafshei kamayo. So the Gemara says, now, when the non-Jew comes in and out of your house and putting down the chametz in his rented space, so his rented space is his, it's not yours, and therefore there's no violation whatsoever of bal yimatzei. Good. So the Gemara says, lamema deschiras kanya. So the Gemara says, really? So that's interesting. So when a non-Jew goes ahead and rents it, so he is considered now, from a halachic standpoint, an owner. The Gemara is not suggesting for a moment now that rental automatically assumes ownership. It just simply means that from a halachic standpoint, meaning if we're going to put the renter in a category, so categorically we're going to put him in the same category as an owner. So the Gemara says, but I'll tell you why that bothers me, because of what we learned back in Avodah Zarah. V'atanan, we learned in Avodah Zarah, v'makum sh'amru lahaskir, whether or not you're allowed to rent property to an idolater. So this is a discussion in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which makes sense. That's where these topics are discussed. So there is a discussion of renting in Eretz Yisrael, and not much of a discussion, meaning the Gemara over there says no. And apa makum sharmu lahasker, now even in places where you are allowed to rent to an idolater, lo lebeis dira amru mimnesha machnis l'socho avodas galilim. You can't rent him residential. Why? Because he's an idolater, and what he's going to do is he's going to bring his idols in. Now, Isak adach adischiris kanya ki kamayo lebeisa denafshi kamayo. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. If we just got done concluding that a renter categorically is the same as an owner, so that means to say that when the idolater is renting your property as a residence and he goes in there and he brings in all his accoutrements of idolatry, so that's no problem whatsoever, meaning he's not bringing it onto your property, he's bringing it onto his property, if we're saying that the renter categorically is like an owner. So the Gemara says, Shani ha'chadavke rechmane b'lashon lo yimatzei. Misha matzu b'yadecha yatzezeh, she'inu matzu b'yadecha. So the Gemara says, look, as far as what we learned back in Avodah Zarah, so when he's a socher, he is not the owner. You're still the owner. And therefore, what he's doing is he's bringing idolatry onto your property. So the Gemara says, leave that as it is. As far as our halacha over here may be a little bit different, is a little bit different, because it's guided by the pasuk of lo yimatzei. Lo yimatzei, the Gemara says, mishematzu biyadecha. It has to be accessible to you. But once you rent out part of your property to a non-Jew, so now he has all rights to the property that he rented, it's not accessible to you, and therefore it's not going to be a violation of lo yimatzei, of bal yimatzei. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. The Gemara now is going to be quoting for the remainder of today's daf many halachas that are said over by Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, right? To keep count. In fact, I did. So it will call this now number one. The first halacha of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Hamotzei chametz bebeiso b'yamtov, kofel lav as a kli. So let's say you find chametz on your house on yantov. So what are you going to do? So it's muksa. Rashi says, lo chazi l'tutule ve'afuke. You cannot move it and take it out. Now, as far as violating lo yira, so Rashi points out over here, that's not a problem. Rashi says you're already mevatel it. Rashi divra maskel kofa love as a kli. Rashi writes halo chazul etotule vafuke. So you can't pick it up and take it out, meaning it's muksa. Umiu beval yira lo avar dahabatle bili be me esmol kid armin lekaman. So Rashi quotes the end of today's daf, right, which is probably where we're going to start tomorrow, but at the end of today's daf, we're going to say that even after you search your chametz and you destroy the chametz, there is also another step, which is bittul. Good. We'll talk about that later this morning. More realistically, we'll talk about that tomorrow. But anyway, so over here, why then do I need to cover it? Meaning, you did the bedika. I happen not to find this piece. You already did bittul, so it's not yours. So what's the purpose of covering it? Rashi writes, Elamishum, Sholi Yishkach, Biyochlanu Tsarach Kfias Kli. Because what happens is that it's just sitting around, and again, even though it's Pesach, and even though you know matzah, 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 but nevertheless, right, you could lose yourself. In other words, you may forget. You've been eating the chametz all year round. And so, habit is very hard to break in. Over here, especially if it's the first day of Yontiv, you may come and eat it. So therefore, what you're going to do is that you flip over a Kli over Yontiv. And then after Yontiv is over, meaning a Cholamo, you get rid of it. Amravim shall hektish hu ein tzarech. Now, if it's hektish, there's no need to cover it. Now, again, over here, the purpose of covering it, as we just said, is only preventative in measure. But when it belongs to hektish, we don't even need that preventative. My time am mivdal bedilim inay. People, generally speaking, have a mindset of staying away from hektish, so therefore you won't become tempted to eat it at all. Halacha number two. Amrav Yehuda Marav achemso shanachri osel amechitza saratvachem mishum heker. Now, if I have the chametz of a nachri in my house for Pesach, so most everybody does, right? The old and ancient minhag Yisrael of selling the chametz, right? Which is interestingly enough not discussed in the Gemara. But anyway, but it's minhag Yisrael. It's an old minhag to sell the chametz. There are people who don't, but the minhag Yisrael is to sell chametz. So what do you do? So you put it somewhere in your house and you partition it. That's this Gemara right over here. Again, just to be clear, I said this yesterday. It is not the Gemara endorsing the sale of chametz. The Gemara never does. The Gemara does not endorse it. The Gemara does not condemn it. The Gemara just simply doesn't discuss it. But once the chametz of a non-Jew is in your house, so you need to partition it. That's our Gemara right over here. So just to remind you that it's not yours, so you won't come to eat it. Now, if it belongs to hektish, unnecessary to make a partition. Why? As we just got done saying, because people have a mindset of not eating hektish. I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. This is now going to be our third halacha of Rav Yehuda Marav as it relates to chametz on Pesach, and specifically over here, bedika. Ein zakuk levayer. Toch shoshim yom, zakuk levayer. So, if you plan on leaving your home for Pesach, and it's already before 30 days prior to Pesach, so then there's no requirement to do biur. And by biur over here, probably we mean both biur and bedika, or let's say in correct order, bedika and biur. If, however, you're within 30 days of Pesach, so then there is a requirement of bedika and biur. Amar Abaye had Amar Toch Shoshim Yom Zakuk Lava'er Lo Amar Ela Shedait Lechazer. If it's within 30 days, there's a requirement to do biur. That's only if you plan on coming back. Aval Ein Dato Lachzer Ein Zakuk Lava'er. But if you have no plans of going back, so Ein Zakuk Lava'er, so you don't have to do bedika. So Amar Ravas, the Ravas says to Abaye, I didn't understand your point at all, and in fact, just the opposite. Look, if you're leaving before Pesach, but you plan on coming back to your home before Pesach, then I don't care when we are in the calendar. I feel like Rosh Hashanah. Nami. You could be 6 months earlier. And the Gemara is just using Rosh Hashanah as a point of reference. But the point is that if you plan on coming back to your house for Pesach, even though you left your house before Pesach, but with an expectation to return before Pesach actually begins, what difference does it make when you leave? So Ela Marava, so Rava says so. Let me give you my position, which is Hadam Arkonim Shoshim Yom In Zakul Gavar Lamar and Eloshein Dat Alachzer Avadat Alachzer Afilu Mar Shoshana Zakul Gavar. So let's say that you are leaving your home and you have no intention of returning for Pesach. Okay, right in the northeast Florida construct, this happens all the time where people are leaving one home, going to another home for Pesach. So there, if you're leaving before 30 days with no intention of coming back, so then there's no requirement of biur. If, however, you're leaving within 30 days, sorry, let me not get to that point. If you're leaving before 30 days and you do plan on coming back for Pesach, so then you have to do bedika, you have to do biur. If, on the other hand, it's within 30 days, so now there's a requirement of bedika and biur. V'azer rav l'tami d'amar rava, now this is rava being consistent, ha'os ha'beso. Otzer kodem shoshin yom, ein zakuk levar. Toch shoshim yom, zakuk levar. If you make your house into storage, and it's before 30 days, so there's no requirement of bedika and biur. If it's within 30 days, there's a requirement of bedika and biur. V'kodem shoshim yom, nami lo amar nalashin data lefnoso. Aval data lefnoso, filo kodem shoshim yom, nami, zakuk levar. So and when it comes to these 30 days, even if I plan on making my house, a storage facility, which basically means I'm piling one thing after another within my house, And I have no plans of making any usage of the house whatsoever. If all that occurred before 30 days, so then fine. So then there could be chametz buried underneath the bottom. There's no requirement to bedika. There's no requirement to biur. You're going to be mevatel it, and you have no, and there's no concern of making usage of it. That would be fine. If it's within 30 days, so then there's a requirement of bedika and biur, which means basically that your storage house, he got to sift through it in order to look for chametz. Okay, hani shloshim yom mai avidatayim. Now, it's been pretty clear now for the last bit of Gemara that there is a benchmark of 30 days. If you left your house within 30 days of Pesach, you have to do bedika and biur. If you left your house with no plans of returning prior to 30 days, then there's no requirement to bedika and biur. You just simply do bittul, and that is sufficient. And now the Gemara, it wants to know, this benchmark of 30 days, where does that come from? So, Maya Vidatayu Kedatayu, the Gemara quotes the following Braisa. Shalom Medarshim Alachos of Pesach Kodim Bei Pesach Shoshim Yom. Rishim and Gamaliel Omer Shei Shabbasos. Learning the Halachos of Pesach in anticipation of Pesach. So, according to the Tanakhama, 30 days prior to Pesach. According to Rishim and Gamaliel, 2 weeks prior to Pesach. My time at the Tanakhama. What's the reason behind the Tanakhama? Now we are on the top of the Amud Beis. Sharei Moshe Amud Bei Pesach Rishon. Amazial Pesach Sheni. You know, Moshe was there at Pesach Rishon, and then some people approached him. You know, we're not able to offer Pesach Rishon. We're in a state of Tumah. So Moshe says, fine, let me tell you about Pesach Sheni. And they were 1 month ahead of Pesach Sheni. Shenemar ve'yasu b'nei Yisrael Pesach b'mo adov v'ksiv v'yin Hashem asher yu t'meim l'nefesh adam parshas baloscha. Good. So this tells us that in anticipation of Pesach, you need 30 days of preparation. Interesting that the model that teaches us this is the amount of time that exists between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. Meaning the prototype wasn't even us getting us ready for Pesach Rishon. It was just for Pesach Sheni. Okay, but nevertheless, that still makes the same point. Reb Shimon Gamliel Amar Amalacha Aydi Dari Be Mila De Pesach Masiklu L'chol Mila De Pesach. And Shimon Gamliel says, in terms of deflecting that as a proof, he says, look, Moshe Rabbeinu happens to be holding in Pesach right now, meaning they're offering Pesach Rishon. People are coming over to him, asking about what we can do. Moshe is introducing Pesach Sheni. It's not because Moshe needed a month of preparation. It's just because right now they were holding in Pesach. So therefore, Moshe was talking in Pesach. My time to Rav Shimon Gamliel was in fact the source of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Shari Moshe, Omid Barosha, Chodesh of Mazel, Pesach, Shemar, Chodesh of Zelachem, Rosh Chadashim. So, because we look at Parshas Bo, and we know that this month is the first month, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to Moshe, and presumably we're on day one of Nisan. Uksiv Dabru, Kol Adas Yisrael, Leimor Basola, Chodesh of Zevi, Chulahem, Yishela, Vesavo, Selavais, etc., etc. So, and now we're going over the halachas of Pesach. So where do we start? We started on the first day of Nisan. From the first day of Nisan until Pesach, that's 2 weeks. Good. That's the source for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Mimai de Bereish Yarcha Kai, Dilma Ba'arba'a B'Yarcha, O B'chamisha B'Yarcha Kai. Gemara wants to know, how do we know we're in the beginning of Nisan? Can it be that maybe we're on the fourth day of Nisan, the fifth day of Nisan? The Torah itself does not tell us the date. The Torah just simply says, here we are in Nisan. So So he says, fine. So I'll cite you a different source. And that is Vayidaber Hashem Moshe ben Midbar Sinai b'shana Hashenis b'chodesh Harishon uksiv Vayisu ben Yisrael zapesach b'mo'ado. So we turn to Parshas Balosha. So they were in the Midbar in the second year, in the first month, and Vayisu ben Yisrael zapesach b'mo'ado. So Achanam is the Gemara says, great. It's Parshas Balosha. The Gemara says, I know, but it doesn't say which day it was that they started learning the halachas. So, Mimai, the Bereish Yarcha Kai, how do I know that was the first day of Nisan? So, Dilma Bar Baba Yarcha, Bechamisha Yarcha, maybe it was day 4, day 5, Kai. So, Amar Avnach, Mayitzak Asya, Midbar, Mi Midbar. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine, we have Xer Shava. Xiv Hach, Be Midbar Sinai, Xiv Hasan, Be Dabar, Hashem, Moshe, Be Midbar Sinai, Be Oel Moed, Be Echad Lechodesh Hasheni. So Malahalam Rosh Chodesh, Afkan Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara says, fine, we have a Gzereshav establishing that it was in fact Rosh Chodesh that Moshe Rabbeinu started teaching the halachas of Pesach. Okay, and Adkan, that takes us to the end of this little section in terms of when do we start engaging in Pesach prior to Pesach? Is it 30 days prior to Pesach or is it 2 weeks? Machlokas HaTanayim. And the Gemara gives us a source for both the Tanakhama's viewpoint and according to Rosh Shimon Gamliel. Interesting, by the way, the Gemara over here does not tell us how the Chachamim would have deflected the proof of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Gemara went in the other direction. The Gemara told us what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would say in response to the Chachamim. Okay, fine. Anyway, we're going to do one more section for this morning, and that is a really important fundamental section regarding how to understand the Torah in terms of chronology. Probably you've heard the expression before, "Ein mukdam u'me'ucher b'Torah," that there is no chronological order to the Torah. It's based on the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Vav, otherwise known as the Gemara we're about to see. Now the Gemara says, now if you look in Sefer Bamidbar, so you're gonna notice that the Torah seems to present itself to be out of order. V'nichtov bereishei dechodesh rishon. Why doesn't the Torah tell us the episode of offering of the Karm Pesach in the desert, which by the way only occurred one time historically through the desert? They were there in the desert for 40 years. And they offer the Karban Pesach all but once. That means that when they get to Eretz Yisrael, right, 40 years later, after having left Mitzrayim, so how many times did they offer the Karban Pesach? So that would be a total now of 2 times. Once in Mitzrayim, and then once in year 1. After that, they didn't offer Karban Pesach again. On another occasion, we're going to go over why they didn't. But they didn't. So, but anyway, but in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, it recounts the one time that they offer the Karban Pesach in the Midbar. And that obviously is a Nisan. That's month number 1. And then Vahar Nicht of the Chosh Hasheni. Now you'll notice the census that was taken in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. So that was in the second month. So now, chronologically, that obviously doesn't work. Meaning the census of the second month. So that is presented at the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar. And then in Parshas Baloscha, some 9 chapters later, so then it goes over the episode of Karban Pesach, which was 1 month earlier, more accurately 2 weeks earlier, but still. So what do we see over here? So Amar Rav Menashe bar Techlifa Mishmei Derav. So what we see over here is the following: Zos Omeris Ein Muktam Uma Ucher B'Torah. So there is no chronology in the Torah. The Torah over here is not to provide for us chronological, historical account of what happened. Obviously, the accounts in the Torah are accurate and true. It just happens to be that the way the Torah presents it does not bound by any chronological order. Okay, and it's clear, meaning it's an obvious conclusion once you notice that the Torah opens up with the second month of the second year in the desert, and then nine chapters later goes back a month to the Karm Pesach. Okay. Before we go on in the Gemara, just I'll comment over here. It's really it's a basic point in terms of application of this principle. The Gemara over here says, "Emuktam amuchar b'Torah." We know Rashi and the Ramban consistently in Chumash debate in terms of the application of this principle. Rashi uses this principle very liberally, meaning Rashi says that whenever you have accounts that are told in the Torah, and it seems to be that the counts are out of order, so Rashi will just simply say, "In muktam amucha b'Torah." Look, the Torah is not there for purpose of chronology. I'll give you a simple example, and that is the Chet HaEgel and the instructions to build the Mishkan. So Rashi says that the building of the Mishkan was in response to the Chet HaEgel. Aye, but there are two parshas of Truma Tetzaveh that are presented before the Chet HaEgel, and according to Rashi, so the Chet HaEgel preceded the instructions to build the Mishkan. So Rashi says over there, yeah, that's right. Ein muktam umeucher b'Torah. The Torah is not giving us chronology, and that's why Rashi has the Mishkan being presented beforehand, even though historically it was after Chet HaEgel. Good. That's Rashi. Ramban on Chumash also was very consistent in terms of very conservatively applying the principle of Ein muktam umeucher b'Torah. The Ramban writes, and forgive me for not quoting it inside. The Ramban writes that the only time we say muktam amucha b'Torah is where it's clear when the Torah itself is dating and giving us dates. So like the example of the Gemara right over here, then and only then do we say in muktam amucha b'Torah. Otherwise, we assume that the rest of the Torah is presented in chronological order. That is the Ramban of the Torah. And that means that in the example that I gave regarding the Mishkan and the Chet HaEgel, so the Ramban has the Mishkan coming before Chet HaEgel, meaning the Mishkan was always meant to be constructed, and it was not a response to Chet HaEgel. Okay, and obviously in that particular example, a lot to discuss within the teachings of Rashi and the Ramban. Nevertheless, we're going to continue in the Gemara. Amra Papa, we're back in the Gemara. We're just going to finish the section of Ein Muktam Amucha B'Torah. Amra Papa Lo Amana Lebetrein Yane. This is true for talking about two topics. But within one inyan, and presumably by one inyan it means one parsha. So then, my demuktam umuktam umay demuuchar muuchar. And what are you going to say that if we're in with one parsha, you have to say that there is chronology that exists within a single parsha. Dilote ma'achi, because the Gemara says, look, we have principles in terms of how to darshan the Torah. Klalu prat ein b'chla alamashtab prat. So you have a klal followed then by a prat. If you are going to even challenge chronology, even in one parsha, in one pasuk, so then you lost klal uprat, because klal uprat is built on the idea that first the klal, then the prat. So what the Gemara says, because once you say in muktam amucha b'Torah, and you apply it even to one pasuk, dema prat uklalhu, because we could just simply flip it around. And the Gemara just simply does this in the opposite. Visu prat uklal, so the Gemara says, look, we're going to lose the integrity of every klal uprat and every prat uklal if we don't assume chronology within a given inyan. So yachi afilu betrayin yani nami anich laman damer klal uprat murachakim zemize in danu so bichlal uprat shaper. Now, in terms of klal uprat, where there is some separation between them, and the Gemara over here happens not to quantify how much separation we're talking about, but the Gemara says that if we subscribe to the idea that if there's separation between them, so then I don't judge it, I don't darshan it like a klal uprat, so that's fine. But elamanda amadan and Michael Amemar, but if you subscribe to the viewpoint, and clearly somebody does, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that we can make a klal uprat even miruchakim, even if they're not proximate to one another, yeah, but how does that work with the principle of emukta mamukha batara? So the Gemara says, "Afilu man damer danan hanimila bechadin yana, aval betrayin yana ain danan." So the Gemara says, "Look, if we're within a parsha, so then we're going to darshan klal uprat, even if there's a little bit of distance between the klal and the prat, or the prat and the klal. But if we're going from one topic to another topic, even this position there can be distance between the klal and the prat, he wouldn't say it under those circumstances, because when it comes to trei inyanim, when it comes to two inyanim, we say ein muktam umurucha b'torah. Okay, adkan. That's where we're going to stop. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up with another halacha of Rav Yehuda Merav, and that is the halacha of the bedika followed then by bittul, that we will start with tomorrow. Let's recap our daf today. Number one, we went over clarification of the Braisa regarding a non-Jew who is subject to you, a non-Jew who is not subject to you. What was the Braisa's point over there? How do you understand the logic of that point of the Braisa? That was point number one that we covered. Number two, we talked about the chametz of a non-Jew being in your property. One part of the Braisa says it's fine, another part of the Braisa says it's not fine. So it's aser. So how do we understand that? So the answer is very simple. It depends on your level of liability and responsibility of that chametz. If you are a shomer sachar or any higher level of responsibility, so then it's aser. How does that work with the principle of davar hagorim lamamon kamamon? That was part of the discussion as well. If, on the other hand, you have no responsibility whatsoever and he's just simply keeping it on your property and you are again, I know it's a machlokas and I know it's not this straightforward, but I'm going to oversimplify. If you're a shomer chinam or if you have no custodial responsibility, so then you are you're not going to be chayv for bal yirah. That was our second topic of discussion. The Gemara segued for just a moment, talking about you have animals and there's a tax on the animals and you have to give a percentage of it to the king. Is the king now considered a shareholder in your animals to create an exemption of Bechor? Good two versions of that discussion, plus another discussion about the dough that you make, where you also have to give a portion of that to the king, and is the king considered a shareholder in that as well? Okay. If a non-Jew brings chametz into your house, his chametz into your house, eating a sandwich in your house on Pesach, problem or no problem? No problem. What if he asks you to serve as a custodian over it? That's a problem. That's usur. And what if you rent out space to him? So then, if you rent out space to him, that's perfectly fine. How does this work together with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which says that even if I rent out space to him, I can't rent out residential space because he's going to bring in his Avodah Zarah? So how does our halacha work in conjunction with the halachas by Avodah Zarah? The Gemara asks and answers that question. Leaving your house before Pesach with no plans on returning to your house. Do you have to do bedika if you leave before 30 days? No. If you leave within 30 days, yes. This is based on the principle of Shoal and Medorshim Behilchas Pesach, Kodem HaPesach Shoshim Yom. The Gemara noted it's a machlokis, whether it's 30 days or whether it's 2 weeks. Obviously, we're going to take the position of the Tanakama. That's going to be that of 30 days, which is going to affect the halacha that if you leave your house with no plans of returning and you leave prior to 30 days, there's no requirement to do bedika or beer. You just simply do bittul, and that would be sufficient. Then on the Amud Beis, and we went over on the Amud Beis the positions of the Tanakhama and Rishim and Gamliel in terms of when do you have to be in the mindset of Pesach, 30 days prior or 2 weeks prior. And parenthetically, by the way, 30 days prior to Pesach, of course, is Purim, right? There's an old minug that you start off with the halachas of Pesach on the Purim Seuda. Anyway, last point to discuss is that we looked at Parshas Baaloscha, noting that that was in the first month of the second year in the Midbar. Meanwhile, how does Sefer Bamidbar open up in the second month of the second year in the Midbar? And clearly, the Torah is out of chronology. And the Gemara's conclusion is that is correct. Ein muktam u'me'uchar b'Torah. The Gemara talks about that when you're within one inyan, so you have to say that there's chronology. But if you're in shtei inyanim, so then all bets are off. Ein muktam u'me'uchar b'Torah. And then I just mentioned quickly very fundamental machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban in terms of the application of the principle of Ein Muktam Umeucha B'Torah.